Welcome back to the Big Show podcast here on Podomatic.com. I'm your host, Robert Henson, and today we're going to be speaking with filmmaker Frank Longo as we discuss his latest film called Capturing the Light. This documentary DVD is on the story of Dorothy Izett. She's a Canadian resident who, since 1974, has been filming lights, beings, and other odd entities out behind her home in Canada. Dorothy Izett hasn't been too popular of a name in UFO research because she has kept her story mainly under wraps since about the late 70s, but she's decided to share her story with filmmaker Frank Longo, and he's decided to share the story with The Big Show. And my first question to you is, how did you find this story of Dorothy Izett?
I heard an interview by author Peter Gattilla, who wrote an Dorothy Izett's autobiography. And I was so compelled by the sincerity of him telling this story. I mean, it's, you know, when you're dealing with this type of topic, you more often than not just go, yeah, sure, okay, whatever. But there was just this sincerity about him that it really compelled me to contact him and just to learn a little bit more and then see if he could put me in contact with Dorothy and her family. And that's how it started.
Now, have you dealt with this subject matter before, the paranormal, extraterrestrials? Had you dealt with that as a filmmaker, or was this really kind of the first time?
This was definitely the first time. Just to give you a sense of my background, I'm a member of the Directors Guild. I live in Los Angeles, and I write and direct comedy. So, to tell you how compelling this story really is, Dorothy's story, to, you know, really grab my attention and dig into what's really going on with her and the effect that it has on the family. You know, to me, that's really what this the story that drew me. So no background in paranormal other than, you know, as a kid, just like anybody else, you know, just you know, fascinated by the concept of it all.
Yeah, and you watch your sci-fi, and, you know, you hear stories of it. One thing about this story, though, is unlike a lot of the other stories you know that we can mention, a big one that came out was Communion, and other stories like it, Fire in the Sky, of a Travis Walton story of being abducted. This one, the participant or the person who was being affected by this was filming this herself. Now, as a filmmaker, as someone who's in the industry, what was your first thoughts when you said, all right, this person says they have film, this is something I'm familiar with, they're kind of in your ballpark?
Yeah, no, exactly. And it's a great question, because that, you know, the main thing that drew me was the idea of kind of exploring this occurrence that has been going on, this ongoing relationship for 30 some years, and so she has kids that have grown up and had their own kids. So to me, that's where, you know, where the story is. But yes, you know, seeing the film, and then when it came time to actually look at the film myself, this was the most pivotal point for me as a filmmaker. My background, understanding how light works with film, I couldn't wait to get my hands on the actual film, and then that's when it just kind of just really shook me. Seeing her actual footage, because things occur on her films that just aren't physically possible. If you want me to, explain a little bit, because her films are multi-layered, it's more than just kind of lights in the sky.
Right. Well, before we get to that, because it's interesting to talk about this, just this idea of you getting it, how much of the film were you allowed to see? You know, because, in your documentary, you talk about, you know, she has 33, well, heck, if she's still filming it, she probably has more, but 33,000 feet of film, which is a lot of film. Anyway, any way you want to look at it, it's a lot. How much were you able to see, and, like, how were you able to look at it? Did you look at it at home, in a film shop, at her house? How did that all come about?
Some of it was first sent to me, a reel, and just so I can get a taste of it. Because before I really dove into it, I just wanted to get, check out firsthand the actual footage. But when I got up to Canada, they, gave me access to all of it. But the sad thing is that, it's 8 millimeter, and she's, you know, she just stores it, you know, basically in a basement in boxes. And so over time, some of it has deteriorated. So, yeah, some of it, it's a shame because some of it will be lost. But I got to go through a great deal, not all of it. It is, you know, if you were to put it back to back, it's like 15, 16 plus hours of footage. And then the cost of getting it transferred also played a factor since this was just, you know, an out-of-pocket production. But, you know, definitely put in the documentary the most compelling footage. And the ultimate goal really is to get the remainder of all her footage transferred into the to digital format to preserve it.
Frank, let's talk about the film. Now, I'm 38 years old, so there are films of me shot on 8mm or Super 8 or whatever they want to call it. If you could, is in layman's term, explain the difference, because, you know, nowadays I have a I always call it my video camera, but it's a digital camera I take films with. I film my kids, you know, and it goes on a little card and I plug it into the USB port and, you know, I can produce it and put sound effects and all kinds of stuff. Explain what this style of film is like and why it's extraordinary. What's on her film?
Right. Well, she you know, has filmed all of these occurrences on her home 8mm camera. And like you just stated, you know, back then, that's what everybody used for a home camera. It was film. And 8mm runs 18 frames per second. Video runs 30 frames a second. But 18 frames a second. So when she's filming these occurrences, there's always a burst of light that occurs. And it's not until she gets the film back and then stops the footage onto that burst of light that the next level of strangeness occurs. And that is the burst of light only occurs in 1/18th of a frame, meaning with those 18 frames per second, the frame prior to the burst of light, there is no bleed over of the light that occurs in the next frame. And then in the frame following the burst of light, there is no bleed over of the light from the previous frame. So it all occurs in one frame, 1/18th of a second. And then with that burst of light, a new image has occurred within that light, meaning if she's filming things that look like lights in the sky, that image becomes a new image for that 1/18th of a second. And though that's just bizarre, there's just different things that will occur. For example, light streaks. There may be a single light that goes from one side of the frame to the other, or a cacophony of lights that streak in all different patterns that basically are covering a territory of distance that's impossible in 1/18th of a second. Sometimes you'll see an image that looks like a landmass or even a body of water, and sometimes even a portrait. Like one example that she has that's in the documentary is it looks like a family. It looks like a motherly figure holding hands with two of her children or something. It's just stuff that's not possible is occurring.
Well,
hopefully that illustrates a little bit about her film.
Well, it does, because, you know, we can all picture, you know, taking an old film, or, and if you're not used to that, think about the negatives you get with photos and holding them up, and it's one after the other, and when they go fast enough, you can see a moving object. Well, in hers, this one frame will just stand out. 1/18th of a second just stands out. In your documentary, you have other filmmakers, people involved with it, who discuss how this is basically impossible for her to fake.
Right. And there was a cinematographer on there who just says, well, you know, it has to be a fake. You know, I don't believe it, because it's this, he knows as a filmmaker, and, you know, his job is working with film and understanding it, and he just says, well, it's not possible. So it leaves us with, you know, Dorothy, is it possible then that she's faking it? Has she been faking this for 30 years? And that's why I think it was, you know, important to actually get to know a person dealing with this type of topic, because so often whenever we hear about it, we don't learn anything about who's behind the claim. You know, that, again, I just thought that was a really interesting thing to explore and get to know Dorothy. So yeah, I mean, that's what it comes down to, is did she fake it all these years? Well, we have to consider that her the kind of effects that would be on there certainly weren't, you know, possible to do definitely not by yourself, but it's, so putting it in today's terms, you'd have to have a team of special effects people working on this one project to, you know, to possibly duplicate some of the stuff she's done today. But mind you, this is 30 years ago. And just to augment it just a bit, you know, some of her family members don't even believe in her stuff. So I can assure you over 30 years that one of them would have gone down in the basement and said, aha, you know, I got you. But that never happened.
Well, you know, you got to meet Dorothy, got to spend time with her family. Talk a little bit about Dorothy herself, and how did she come off to you? Because, you know, honestly, a lot of times you hear stories and then, you know, you go to a UFO festival, you meet some of them, and you have fringe elements to this. What did you think of Dorothy when you met her?
Oh, man, Robert, I mean, you totally hit it on the head. I kept waiting for every person, you know, from Peter to family members. I really just kept waiting for the proverbial other shoe to drop that, yeah, they're a little out there. But I just, the best way to describe meeting Dorothy was, and the family, was they were like my own family. They reminded me of my own family, very warm, charming, just normal folks who just are living with this thing on the side. I mean, family members are like, hey, we've got families raised, we've got our own things to do, we've got jobs, and, you know, they just accept that it is part of, you know, their lives, but they don't revolve their lives around it, and they're just completely warm, loving people, like family.
Well, part of the story you tell in Capturing the Light is that Dorothy, you know, when this started happening to her, she went out, she contacted newspapers to see if anybody knew what was going on. She contacted some other people. Then finally she called a radio station to find out what was going on. And then she received some advice early on that she took to heart, and it basically was keeping everything under wraps. Explain a little bit of that to kind of explain why Dorothy's story hasn't been out there.
Right. She was put in touch with a producer from that radio show, actually, said, well, first you got to start, you know, filming this stuff, because at the time she wasn't. And she really wanted to prove to the family that something was going on. But in the meantime, after she got her footage back, she showed it to that producer of the radio show, and she says, okay, you definitely are, you know, telling the truth about seeing things in the night sky. Well, we need to put you in contact with Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who the audience, you know, is probably familiar with. He's a world-class astronomer. He became kind of the main person, you know, in ufology, trying to investigate. So he was given some of her films and was really compelled by her work. So he went out and met with Dorothy, and you know, he, to protect his own reputation, he ran her through a gamut of tests, through the, you know, meeting with a psychologist, sending out her camera to an engineer that he knew at the University of Chicago, to bringing three of his own film cameras and saying, okay, use this camera, okay, use this camera. And she just passed on all of those tests. And he said his final conclusion was, you know, this is happening. So don't go out right now, because this is, you know, just keep doing what you're doing and amass a body of work. And when that time, and when you've done that, then go out. And in the meantime, don't, you know, affiliate yourself with anybody that's in this world, in this ufology world, the quote unquote lunatic fringe. You know, so she really did that. Now, you know, here and there, her story would leak out because friends would tell other friends and neighbors and stuff like that. So, you know, there were little things that came out. Maybe her story would come out getting, you know, in the middle of some other stories, or really sensationalized, and that just left a bad taste in her mouth, and she really just shied away from the media. And I was honored that she allowed me to tell her story, quite frankly, because they weren't, the whole family is not very media friendly. They haven't had very good experiences in the past.
No, and you know, I mean, even in your film, they don't come off as media savvy. They don't come off as prepared. They, you know, I mean, there's points they come off as a family, because you can tell, you know, they're in their own home. They know the house. They know the place. But they don't come off as anybody who is ready for this. In my opinion, I think she made the really smart move, whether people in the end up believing it or not. She made the really smart move of doing that, as it's, you know, staying away from other people. But she stayed away, and even her own family members, you know, hadn't had her experiences. I want to talk about now the portion where you guys actually are there. You're talking to her daughter. She's describing her first experience, which I think, if I remember correctly, was 2002, where she happened to go. She got to go out with her mom when her mom was filming. She was telling this story. It described to my audience what happened.
Right. So, like you were saying, we were just interviewing Dorothy's daughter, Malin, recounting her first time that she finally had an experience after all these years of her mom, you know, having these claims. And she recounted it where it occurred, and that was by the kitchen window. And she just recounted that story. But it wasn't until I got back to Los Angeles and started digitizing the footage to edit it that I noticed something very odd going on. And that was there was activity, just like Dorothy's films, occurring during the entire interview, during Marilyn's entire interview. That at first I was like, oh, what a coincidence, you know, I'm doing a documentary on a woman with these claims, and here I am getting something. That, it must be, you know, car headlights. And all of a sudden, that light would shoot in a different direction, you know, at an improbable speed, or it would suddenly split up and rejoin. It was doing things that every time I thought I had it figured out, it would do something to negate that. And it really kind of freaked out my cameraman when he saw that. I mean, it really freaked him out.
So what was the first thing you did? Because, you know, eventually you get get back in touch with Dorothy. But what's the first thing you guys did once you said, all right, I'm not really sure what's going on in the film here? What do you do? Was your first thought to get in touch with Dorothy? What did you guys do next?
Well, I knew that I wanted to go back up and show it to the family and get their reaction to it. But first, I wanted to have an outside source take a look at it because, you know, I know that I didn't do anything. I didn't doctor anything. But to hear it from somebody on the outside with far more credibility than I, and that would be ILM, Industrial Light and Magic. They're the, you know, world premier special effects house, you know, out here in Hollywood.
Yeah, even so, I know who they are, you know. And that's, you
know. Right. So I had them take a look at my footage, and they said unequivocally they can prove that, you know, it is not doctor footage. In other words, I didn't do anything. Now, they wouldn't go so far as to say it's a UFO because, you know, they don't know what the circumstances were, but they just know that I didn't doctor it, you know. So that it was, I mean, of course I knew that, but it needed to be heard from somebody else other than me.
Right. So this all shows up on your footage. So now you've got this, and it was the footage of the light behind her. It's moving to the left, it's moving to the right, it's becoming two lights. And then there was this other kind of series of lights in another window. And like you said, it could be anything, but you guys didn't put it there. So you take it back up to the family, and then in the documentary, Dorothy talks about not really how it happened, but she really kind of talks about, in a way, I guess for lack of a better term, it was kind of a setup. She kind of said that she kind of talked with the beings and said, hey, you know, this is your show.
Right. I mean, she's always, you know, saying this is, you know, her, I guess, quote unquote, job of all this was to, you know, ultimately get this footage out to let people know. And since we were there, she says, you know, she was in the other room while we were interviewing Marilyn going, you know, these guys seem like good guys, and, you know, why don't you just do your thing? That's what she said, and she told her daughter that right after the interview. Of course, they didn't know that there was any, you know, I had anything, but that's what she, you know, told her daughter that she meditated on or prayed about. So very, very strange indeed, for sure.
So it becomes very strange. We're speaking with Frank Longo this evening, if you're just tuning in. His documentary film is called Capturing the Light. You can find out more, by the way, at CapturingTheLightDVD.com. You can go to the website, view trailers, and find out even more about it. So all this goes, I want to ask you, when you were walking in there, you know, some people are skeptical, some people are not, some people are on the fence. Where were you walking in, and where do you think you are walking out of making this documentary?
Yeah, man, well, that's the big question personally for me. I mean, the journey that this film has taken me through. I believe in God, and I believe that God created the universe. But, you know, just personal belief is I always had a hard time believing that he planted just one seed in this vast universe. So I always kind of personally felt that there was life out there. Now, whether or not they were coming here was a completely different story. I've always had an interest in it, but, you know, like I said, in my heart to heart, believe that out there, not here. So that's really, I mean, what the film, going through the process of making the film, holding Dorothy's footage and examining the footage, understanding how light works with film, and these things that can't possibly happen physically, has really made me have to step back and reevaluate my thoughts on it. And to be honest with you, I still have a hard time dealing with it sometimes, because it kind of freaks me out, to be honest.
Well, you know, I could imagine, because really, I've already my wife and I were sitting down watching this last night, watching your film last night, and I said to my wife, I said, we got to find out where this lady lives, because you know, I've always had this curiosity with it. I'll admit I've always been skeptical. I believe in God, but I'm like, if this is happening out there, I would really be interested in seeing it, and like, you know, in seeing what happens. Not to exploit anybody. I don't want to know. You know, I don't even need to talk to them if they could just let me camp in their front yard for a couple days. I don't need to use your house. I'll bring some canned food. I just want to just sit and watch. Now, with all that, I have to ask you, because your documentary is 47 minutes long.
Right.
It's pretty quick, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, when you tell the stories, like earlier on in we were talking about the single frame in the 18 frames per second, and when they're bigger and they're blown up, you can see things, and it's not like a Rorschach test, you know, like, oh, I can pick out, I see a cloud, I see a star, I see a cloud.
Right.
You know, you can see things in there. But you only had so much time to delve into it. Really, as a viewer, I'm sitting there going, can you go back to that one? Can we see that again? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How, when you were setting this up, how did you decide to draw on how much you would put together? You know, you said it was privately funded, so of course, money's always an issue. We all know this. So how did you decide to what you could put in, what you couldn't put in, and the pacing of your film?
Yeah, man, that's a great question, And you know, this was my first experience with a documentary, having never done one. And in fact, I really didn't know how to put it together, because I come from the narrative background. And so I actually started working, editing some shows for the History Channel and National Geographic and Discovery, just to get a better sense of how to put it together. And that really did help out. So, you know, sure, finances were some part of not having, you know, a ton more, and some of it has to do with my lack of experience in documentary, you know, and I really do appreciate the feedback, something like that, because, you know, obviously people want to see more, so, you know, what I think I'm going to do is actually probably, you know, add just raw footage of her stuff, as, like, on extras, and put it out that way. But my real intention, you know, was to get her story out, and hopefully bring attention and just awareness to it. So there was a balance that had to be made, to where I didn't want this to just be just another UFO thing. I wanted to bring some reality to it by getting to know Dorothy and bring awareness to her story. Thereby hoping down the road that by doing so that it would bring in, you know, more of researchers and people that are more technically skilled than I, and you know, obviously in physics and things like that, that could really examine it. So I think, you know, it's kind of like a stepping stone to a bigger thing. And it actually has worked out, to be honest with you, Rob, because now there is interest on the outside coming in that wants to take it to the next level.
Parts of it, Frank, that leave me wanting more. There's a segment in there where it's a real close-up of one of Dorothy's films. And I guess it's whomever, let's just say, for lack of better words, looking out the window of whatever craft they're in. And it's a pretty good shot. But like you said, it's kind of freaky and it's kind of eerie.
Yeah.
And it leaves you going, all right, is there more of that? Is there, where, do you know, do we have a zoom out? Do we have a zoom in? And it leaves a lot. I want to ask you this, because, you know, I guess in certain forms of the media, you know, whether you're filmmaking, whether you're on radio, there's X amount of things you're looking for when you're doing this. In part of your documentary with Dorothy and her family trusting you with this story, There had to be a certain amount of trust, which at the end had to be met. When the family saw this, and I'm assuming they have, did you meet that expectation, and were you looking to meet that expectation?
Oh, man, that is a great question. Because I did have to get a certain amount of, obviously, trust to even have this process happen. So I really did have to kind of lay out what my intentions were. You know, that was in proposals and things like that, and let the family, you know, just I really had to assure them that I wasn't going to exploit them. I just wanted to tell her story. And so, you know, I could get that sense when I was first starting with them. But, they really, the family, like I said, is really warm. And so they knew that I wasn't a shyster. I wasn't there to, you know, take advantage of you know, the family in any way. And so, they have seen it. And they were ecstatic about it. I mean, because they just felt like that was it. They just, you know, they just wanted to show Mom for what she is instead of just being a soundbite and let them get to know her. Now, Dorothy, you know, as happy as she is, she still wants to push it because she has bigger goals, and that is really, you know, is to get all her stuff transferred to digital so that at the end of the documentary I have a place, an address where you can donate to have her footage preserved. But she really wants to go every frame by frame, every occurrence that she has, and explain the situation, explain what her experiences were. You know, there you can get more detail on some of her occurrences in the book, or that author that I mentioned earlier, Peter Gotella. That book is Contact with Beings of Light, and explains a little bit more on certain experiences that she had. But that, yeah, so she does want more. As happy as they are, they were happy with this first step for sure. The family is. Now, Dorothy, like I said, just wants to make sure that her, before she passes, because she's 86 now, that she's able to do that, to get it all out.
Well, see, that's good to hear, because, you know, even while watching your film, you know, I pick up the true sense that this is a family. These are regular people. You know, this isn't the Blair Witch Project going on, something to look like a documentary. These are just regular folks living their regular life. You could tell somebody had to get up at work at 7 the next day. You know, and you could pick that up in the film. And when that comes across to me, you want to make sure, you really want to go, like, you know, you want to make sure that these folks, too, are also happy, because, you know, like you're saying, Dorothy wants to tell this story now, you know, right, coming from 1974, but she just wants to be a regular person. You tell the story of the church contacting her and other people contacting her, and even one of her sons tells the story of, you know, her Catholic upbringing and the little bit of a conflict she had in her own life. So it's good to hear that now, you know, something that she's allowed in is working. It is something that benefits her, and that she does want to, you know, she does want it. It is coming out the way she'd like to see it come out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No. And I just was honored that they felt like I was, the one that came along that was right to be able to tell their story. Really, really honored.
Well, when you were done with this project, and, you know, I mean, you're basically kind of shaking hands and saying, you know, we're kind of done here. You know, Where is Dorothy going with this? You know, you mentioned she's 84. She wants to get this stuff digitized so it can be preserved. Without getting too much philosophical, because I think that's probably more in the book than in your film. Your film's really the story of the people and what's, you know, been going on. Where does she think this needs to go, or where has she been connected that she thinks this needs to go?
Well, now that the film is out, I mean, I don't feel like it's kind of done. You know, I mean, it's people like you are so considerate in allowing me to have any time to let people, you know about the story. You bring the story to a lot, you know, to your entire audience who otherwise never even heard of this. So, you know, that's I'm continuing in that aspect and trying to get contacts. Like, since the film has come out, I'm getting contacts. I got a contact from Academy Award winning a documentary filmmaker who's trying to hook me up with a transfer house to help actually transfer her footage. So I'm continuing on that, and I keep in touch with the family. And now, as far as Dorothy goes, you know, she's 86. She gets, you know, she's a little impatient. She doesn't know how much time she has, but she wants to keep things moving forward. And there are now, because of the document coming out, even though it's just relatively recent that it's come out, we're about 6 weeks, you know, there are bigger, more funded networks that are trying to help out and to get her story out after watching the DVD.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's an amazing story. I mean, it really is. Whether people believe, disbelieve, don't know, it's a quite an amazing story to find out. Like I said, I'm, you know, now I want to see more of the dudes in the window. All right, between you and I just really do. I don't know why, it just got me all freaked out, but I want to see more of it, man, because it's now.
I know what you mean. And there is a lot more. There is a lot more. I mean, she has photos that, you know, just, you know, inside craft as well. And there's some amazing stuff. And I really wish there was, you know, I had a lot more funding to be able to do it total justice, but that's okay. You know, I did one step of it and with the goal of getting it out there and bringing more people in to take it further, and the research aspect, is happening, you know, so I'm proud of, you know, that I'm helping out in that way.
Frank, I wanted to ask you, where do you go from here? I mean, now when you shoot film, do you spend more time looking in the background than you do the foreground? has anything else happened to you? One of the stories that is told in your story is the light. There's something we didn't even talk about, is when Dorothy decided to film the stills of some of her film, and that it emitted light itself, and they talked about that. Some of that is kind of philosophical, but have you had anything else happen to you since then?
Well, I mean, just anecdotal stuff. I mean, not you know, I'd be honest with you, after seeing my footage, I've thought about, well, my wife and I were like, why don't we go camping, and why don't we take a camera, and why don't we, you know, see if anything happens now that, you know, because Dorothy said, as she says in the documentary, you know, anybody can have this experience. It's about how open you are. And I just actually kind of said, you know, I'm a little too freaked out to actually go and do that, because I don't know if I want to stand face to face with something that, you know, looks like, I don't know, you know, I don't know what to expect. I don't want to.
Yeah, looks like me, but not.
Yeah, exactly. I just have a feeling if that happens to me that I might just, you know, curl up in the fetal position and start crying.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to be that cool.
Already.
Yeah, because I'm not sure if I'm ready to fall apart in front of a bunch of other life forms, you know? I'm crying like a baby.
That's so humiliating, right?
Yeah, you know? They're going to go back and going, oh, man, these earthlings. They're such wimps.
But one anecdotal story. I mean, just, you know, I was showing some friends and explaining what you were just talking about, the flash frames and how they created new flash frames. I had on my editing system stopped it on a flash frame, and I was telling them about that. And I kid you not, the entire screen flashed, and they literally got up and left. They freaked out. But, you know, that's just a story that, yeah, I can't prove that. I mean, you know, other than those two gentlemen coming forward and saying it's true, we were freaked out. But, I mean, it's things like that that, yes, I've had that have occurred. But I have not gone out of my way. I don't think I'm quite ready for it.
Well, that's my thing. You know, I, you know, in your film, it talked about the flash frame, and it's saying, well, if it does it there, and now you're filming it, what is it doing on your film? So now all of a sudden, I'm kind of like sliding around the corner a little bit, going, all right, well, should I be sitting directly in front of my television at this point, or what should I be doing, and should I watch this again? That's the question. So it's really interesting stuff, and, you know, you don't touch a lot on the philosophical, which, you know, to me, watching the film was good, because it laid out, here's who it is, here's what happened, here's where she came from, here's what, and that was really cool, because, you know, now having an interest, I have an interest in looking into the book and finding out more about the story, because philosophies can always cross, but this idea of what's happening at Dorothy's home and what she's been seeing since 1974 in itself, you didn't disturb that idea within itself, and I thought that was a very a really great way of having the film, of taking the film, of having those philosophical points, but really driving the film with, you know, here's what happened, ladies and gentlemen, and leaving it at that. I thought that was very cool.
You know, I really, really appreciate that, Robert, because, you know, as more people watch it, it was some are, you know, absolutely just amazed by it. There's some that are in the UFO community, of which I'm not a part of, so I don't know how, you know, how angry they can get sometimes. But, they, you know, some want them to explain everything, tell me everything, you know, what they say, what they look like, what they do, and all that. And to me, that I thought there was an opportunity here because of the authenticity of Dorothy to do something in a manner that wouldn't turn, I guess you could say, mainstream off. I wanted, and this has been the result, is that people who aren't into this are able to enjoy it. And I think it's kind of like a crossover. It's kind of like a country song that makes it into the pop, you know, the pop charts. It's in a sense, you know, that was my goal, is to bring awareness to a story. And the best way to do that was to just approach it by telling her story and not getting into the meaning of the universe.
Yeah, I think it was good too, because from what I understood, you know, it's her job to tell the story, so it was your job to tell her story. Because next thing you know, tonight you'd hear, "Hello, Frank. Yeah, it's us. Look, you were telling our story, and we wanted to, you know." And then you're gonna have the guys outside your door, man, and you know you'll be all freaked out.
Good point.
You know,
man.
Just because I wouldn't mess with it. You know what I mean? I don't know what it is, but I wouldn't mess with it. That's just you know, little advice there I'm handing out to you. Well, Frank, I want to thank you for spending this much time with us on the show to talk about your documentary.
Really, man. I'm sorry to cut you off there, but I can't thank you enough for allowing me the time to be able to, you know, just discuss this documentary, because I do think it's important in the sense that it brings, I think, credibility to this phenomenon, and I think it needs more attention. So I thank you so much for having me on.
Well, we appreciate you being here, and I'll tell you what, it gives a lot to explore. I mean, you know, for listeners out there, I don't care what side of the fence they may be sitting on, but there's a lot. It gives all the material to explore. You know what I mean? It doesn't leave you, and like you said, I mean, you know, 30,000 feet, there's a lot more out there, but it's really a good step. So if you have an interest, you want to find out more, go to Capturing the Light DVD. It's all one word, of course, Capturing the Light DVD. Or if you want to, just Google Frank Longo and put UFO after it, and it'll show up right there too, in like the top two on the Google. See, I love the Google, man.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that. Thanks for letting me know.
Yeah, I did it the other day, and it was like, bang, and there it was. And then it takes you, like, the fourth one down, takes you to the YouTube thing you guys have up there.
So now I'm Frank Longo, the UFO guy, not Frank Longo, the comedy director.
No, not at all. No, that's already gone, man, you know?
Oh, boy.
But now if they ever need any alien comedy, you're on your own. And you're probably going to have to explain Alf to them. That's all I'm saying.
Oh,
they're gonna be like, all right, what's up with Alf? Who came up with that? We don't eat cats. Frank, unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to thank you once again for joining us on the big show. We really appreciate it. And I had a great time. I'm glad you could be here.
I had a fantastic time. Thanks so much again, Rob.
Well, thanks for tuning in to the Big Show podcast. Of course, we're going to have more podcasts coming your way, and hopefully quicker than we've been doing them. We have plenty of shows on deck and more coming up, so always tune in to thebigshow.podomatic.com. For everybody here at the Big Show, I'm your host, Robert Henson. Thanks for tuning in.